The headlines: Tehran says it is planning a series of initial measures in response to the recent anti-Iran resolution by the International Atomic Energy Agency. A Palestinian teenager succumbs to his injuries hours after he was shot by Israeli forces. And scores of people are killed and hundreds of others injured in the earthquake that rattled Indonesia's island of Java. Hello and welcome. Your world news coming to you live from our headquarters in Tehran. My name is Gisum Shahmadi. Tehran says a series of initial measures have been taken in response to the recent anti-Iran resolution by the International Atomic Energy Agency. The foreign ministry spokesman says the details of the steps will be announced by the Atomic Energy Organization of Iran. Nasser Kanani says the West's support for the recent anti-Iran resolution by the IAEA shows that they have a will to hinder technical cooperation between Tehran and the UN agency. According to Kanani, Western countries were expected to avoid such politically motivated measures, considering Iran's positive and constructive cooperation with the IAEA. The resolution adopted on Thursday calls on Tehran to fully cooperate with the agency's probe into uranium traces at three alleged undeclared sites in Iran. Tehran says the IAEA is basing its statements on information fabricated by Israel. University professor from Tehran, Fuad Izadi, says the West's confrontational approach will backfire in the long run as it gives Iran cold feet in voluntary cooperation with the UN nuclear agency.
You know, I think the real motive behind this resolution is actually to force Iranian officials to stop cooperating with the agency. They want to take the case to the UN Security Council, and by passing this type of politically motivated resolutions, they want to basically create a scene where Iran, given the fact that these type of resolutions are politically motivated, it stops its cooperation with IAEA. In practice, what will happen is that Iran will follow NPT guidelines when it comes to IAEA cooperation, but Iran will do the absolute minimum, nothing more than what is required. Yeah, so this type of practice is actually going to backfire in the long run. Because the access, the extra access that Iran was providing under the JCPOA is going to disappear totally, and it's going to be the other side that's going to lose the access that they had more than what Iran was supposed to do. And if they push further, I think Iranian officials will take extra measures to make sure that anti-Iran resolutions has a cost for the countries that sponsor.
Iran's Islamic Revolution Guards Corps has once again conducted drone and missile strikes against the bases of terrorists in Iraq's northern Kurdistan autonomous region. The IRGC says that the strikes targeted the remaining positions of the separatist groups operating against the Islamic Republic. The force says that the attacks hit three different locations where the terrorists were holed up and caused serious damage. The IRGC has so far carried out three rounds of airstrikes on terrorist hideouts in northern Iraq over the past weeks. The forces says that this is in response to their operations against Iran. Tehran says it opted for the strikes after Kurdistan, a regional government, failed to take appropriate measures against the terrorists. Head of the London-based Islamic Human Rights Commission, Masood Shajadeh, says that the Iraqi Kurdistan region has become a main base for organizing terrorist operations against the Islamic Republic.
The Kurdistan region has become one of the main bases of this type of operation. And we saw even evidence in past of assassination of scientists and so forth, again, being sort of organized, coordinated, and implemented through this region. So Iran has been asking over and over from Kurdistan government to make sure that their territory is not going to be used in this way, which is unlawful and against international law. But for whatever reason, be it the fact that they're not willing or they're not capable, we are not seeing action. And indeed, now the Iran seem to have realized that the only way forward is to take actions themselves and stop this insertion and training bases and sort of center for coordinating acts of terrorism.
The Iranian president says the United States, France, and several other European countries are blatantly supporting terrorists and rioters. Ebrahim Raisi warned that their backing for terrorists will definitely not be in their best interests. The president says that Iran's enemies have resorted to combined war to disrupt the country's progress by targeting its security, economy, and production. He instructed the Iranian foreign ministry to adopt the necessary measures through diplomatic and legal channels to thwart and counter acts of sedition orchestrated outside the country. He also touched upon anti-Iran propaganda campaign by foreign media using fake news and false narratives related to the recent events in Iran. The president urged domestic media and relevant bodies to disseminate information precisely and transparently and promptly. 2 years ago, Joe Biden came to the White House with promises of returning to the JCPOA. Halfway into his term, his policy on Iran has been seemingly the complete opposite. Ramin Mazahari reports from Chicago.
In the 2020 presidential election campaign, Joe Biden made a full return to the JCPOA pact on Iran's nuclear energy program, a key plank of his foreign policy promises. After 2 years in office, his report card on keeping that promise can only be given a failing grade. Not only has Biden not returned to the JCPOA, but he has constantly levied new sanctions on Iran and seems to have fully retained the maximum pressure policy of his predecessor.
For 2 years now, Biden and, you know, his team of foreign policy ghouls like Tony Blinken have refused to lift the illegal sanctions dating back to the Trump era. You know, Trump illegally withdrew from the JCPOA, and they're refusing to lift those sanctions, which has made any negotiations with Iran impossible.
Biden had benefited from total control over Congress, but the Democratic Party lost control of the House of Representatives in the recent midterm elections. Low turnout and disillusionment with many unkept promises are often being cited as the main reasons for the Democrats' defeat. Last month, a top poll on foreign policy found that a whopping 79% of Americans want the United States to continue to pursue negotiations with Iran. On almost no other key foreign policy question was there such massive support. With Congress now divided and more conservative, most analysts say that even if Biden did genuinely pursue diplomacy, Congress would easily block the deal under the so-called Iran Nuclear Agreement Review Act.
You know, the ball has been in the U.S.'s court for 2 years, and, you know, I can see no reason to believe that Biden or the U.S. is committed to the agreement or negotiating in good faith. All they've done is ask for more concessions from Iran. And actually, more recently, they seem a lot more interested in trying to destabilize the country by meddling in its affairs, its sovereign affairs, of course, referring to the recent protests.
With their recent accession to the Shanghai Cooperation Organization, Iran has significantly expanded their diplomatic cooperation with their non-Western allies. Ramin Mazahari, Chicago.
Israeli forces have killed yet another Palestinian in the West Bank as the regime's deadly crackdown continues unabated across the occupied territories. This is what we discussed in our news review program. Let's take a listen. Welcome to another edition of the News Review. In this edition, Israeli forces have killed yet another Palestinian in the flashpoint city of Jenin in the occupied West Bank. According to the Palestinian Health Ministry, the victim, identified as Muhammad al-Saadi, succumbed to his injuries hours after being shot by the regime troopers. The shooting took place during a raid on a neighborhood in Jenin. Israeli forces also injured four Palestinians and arrested a number of others. The regime has recently intensified its deadly crackdown in the occupied West Bank. More than 140 people have been killed in the area so far this year alone. To discuss that further, we're joined by Mona Kendall, our correspondent, joining us live from Ramallah, and also Wafa al-Udaini, a Palestinian activist and journalist, joining us live from Gaza. Mona, if you could please tell us more, elaborate on this recent request, a list of shame, and has Israel ever been on this list?
Well, Israeli forces raided Jenin and its refugee camp this morning. According to the Israeli military, the operation aimed to arrest one of the Palestinian resistance fighters, Ratib al-Beg, from Jenin. They surrounded his home, and unfortunately, they succeeded to arrest this Palestinian young man. During their raid to Jenin, of course, clashes took place between Israeli forces and Palestinian residents of the refugee camp. Israeli forces used their live rounds against the Palestinian protesters, wounding a number of them. One of those Palestinians who were wounded was 17-year-old Mahmoud al-Saadi. He succumbed to his injuries when he was transferred to Jenin Hospital, and hundreds of Palestinians were seen taking his body to his home and taking part in a funeral procession that was supposed to take place at this time in the Jenin refugee camp. As usual, it's not, let's say, an easy raid to Jenin. Every time Israeli forces storm Jenin area and its refugee camp, then we speak about Palestinians being wounded, arrested, and in many cases, Palestinians being killed, as what happened this morning.
So if you could please also tell us more about the list of shame and putting Israel on that list, Wafa al-Udaini, in your opinion, has Israel ever been on this list of shame, and how can that affect the situation of Palestinians, particularly Palestinian children?
Yeah, thank you so much for having me. Indeed, this thing, Israeli, and what is happening here in the occupied Palestine, it is severe occupation and it is severe genocide. And this thing, you know, what we can expect from the occupation, they are, like, since the occupation of Palestine, they committed so many crimes, like thousands and millions of crimes committed by this occupation. And the invasion of the towns, the killing of innocent, the killing of the children, massacring of children, women, and every Palestinians here. It becomes like ISIS here in Palestine, and in particularly in the occupied West Bank. So they just, invaded the town and kill whoever they want, and raid the homes while the Palestinian people are sleeping. And they just violate the international law, and they violate the life of the Palestinian people. So this thing, the Palestinian, unfortunately, the Palestinian children got accustomed to such situation, to such genocides, to such brutality by the occupation. Indeed, as we mark the International Children's Day, we know that the international community, like, turns a blind eye to the Palestinian children here in Palestine. For example, there is like 170 Palestinian kids inside the Israeli prison, and nobody know about that. Nobody act. Nobody stop Israel from doing so. You know, they are subject to all kind of brutality, to all kind of oppression. They are deprived of basic need as children. And then there are so many, and every day the occupation forces detain Palestinian kids and so many Palestinians. And for example, the Palestinian kids here in for example, in Gaza, like they just survived several aggressions, several bloody aggressions here. And most of the victims during these aggressions are from the children. So it's really what is happening here. You can say that it is a genocide against the childhood. But, you know, like the ministry media, they don't cover this thing, and the international community do or does nothing to stop the occupation. So that's why the occupation keep killing and massacring and executing the Palestinians everywhere.
So Wafa Al-Udaini, Palestinian activist and journalist from Gaza. Also, we had with us Mona Kandel, our correspondent. Thank you very much to both of you. And at least 56 people have been killed and hundreds of others injured in an earthquake that rattled Indonesia's main island of Java. The local official says thousands of houses have been damaged. The earthquake is reported to have been 5.6 in magnitude. Indonesia's meteorological agency is warning residents near the quake site to stay outside their buildings and watch out for more tremors. Indonesia experiences frequent seismic and volcanic activity due to its position on the so-called Pacific Ring of Fire, where tectonic plates collide. And now with that, we come to the end of this edition of World News. Stay tuned.
Fruitful Moments with IRIB English Radio. Log on to our website, www.parstoday.com/en.
In the United States, Senate Minority Leader Mitch McConnell has been re-elected as GOP Senate leader, managing to stave off a challenge from fellow Republican Senator Rick Scott of Florida. We take a look at the U.S. media's coverage of this story. Please stay with us. The website of Forbes.com has also covered this story. Senate Minority Leader Mitch McConnell, a Republican from Kentucky, will serve another 2 years as a top Senate Republican after staving off a challenge from Senator Rick Scott, a fellow Republican from Florida. As GOP leaders face blowback for the party underperforming in the midterm elections. Senator Mitch McConnell beat Rick Scott by a vote of 37 to 10, with one senator voting present. GOP lawmakers told reporters following a closed-door meeting that lasted more than 3 hours. The election was carried out via secret ballot, leaving it unclear how all the senators voted. Rick Scott, who chairs the National Republican Senatorial Committee and is widely considered one of the most hard-right senators in Congress, was the first Republican to challenge Mitch McConnell since he became Republican Senate leader in 2007. Rick Scott announced his leadership bid on Tuesday, 15th of November, saying Republicans needed bold change after a poor midterm election showing, though Mitch McConnell said he was confident he had enough votes to be re-elected. Republican leaders are reeling after the party failed to win back control of the U.S. Senate in last week's midterm elections, even as it appears the GOP is on pace to win the House of Representatives by a narrow margin, despite expectations of Republicans cruising in on a red wave to capture both chambers. Former President Donald Trump's stature in the Republican Party appears to have taken a big hit, as voters widely rejected midterm candidates in competitive races who embraced Trump's false allegations of fraud in the 2020 presidential election. House Minority Leader Kevin McCarthy, Republican of California, has also faced backlash. The GOP nominated McCarthy on Tuesday as the party's choice for the next Speaker of the House, but he only won in a 188-31 vote among Republicans, leaving him well short of the 218 votes he needs from the full House to win the speakership. Members of the hard-right House Freedom Caucus led the pushback, and they're expected to make demands in exchange for supporting Kevin McCarthy prior to the full House vote. Tensions have simmered between Rick Scott and Mitch McConnell for months, but reached a fever pitch after the midterm elections, with allies of Mitch McConnell blaming Rick Scott's National Republican Senatorial Committee, a fundraising platform of Senate Republicans, for the poor midterm election results. Mitch McConnell also notably panned a Scott proposal released earlier this year that would require low-income Americans to pay income tax and require Congress to reauthorize Social Security and Medicare every 5 years. NBC News has also covered the same story. Senate Minority Leader Mitch McConnell of Kentucky was re-elected as Republican leader on Wednesday, defeating a challenge from Senator Rick Scott of Florida that reflects growing anxiety within the Republican Party after it underperformed in the midterm elections. A Mitch McConnell spokesman, David Popp, confirmed the secret ballot victory. Senator Mike Braun, a Republican from Indiana, told reporters that 37 Republicans voted for Mitch McConnell, while 10 supported Rick Scott, and one voted present. The vote came after the conference rejected a motion by Mitch McConnell's dissenters to delay the leadership election, which 16 Republicans voted for, according to two sources. The McConnell-Scott battle represents a larger clash over the direction and governing vision of the Republican Party, with the two men offering conflicting theories about why the GOP failed to win the Senate in the midterm elections as Democrats clinched the majority in the Senate. It is most serious challenge Mitch McConnell has faced for his position after having led the Republican caucus for the past 15 years. I believe it's time for the Senate Republican Conference to be far more bold and resolute than we have been in the past, Rick Scott, who chaired the GOP Senate campaign arm during the 2022 cycle, said in a letter asking for members' votes on Tuesday, 15th of November. We must start saying that we are for, not just what we are against. I do not believe we can simply continue to say the Democrats are radical, which they are. Republican voters expect and deserve to know our plan to promote and advance conservative values. Mitch McConnell offered a different diagnosis of the Republican losses at his Tuesday news conference, attributing them to poor candidates and chaotic behavior within the Republican Party, which he said frightened independent voters and moderate voters. I don't own this job, Mitch McConnell said on Wednesday after the vote. Anybody who wants to run for it can feel free to do so. So I'm not in any way offended by having an opponent or having a few votes in opposition. I'm pretty proud of 37 to 10. Mitch McConnell is now on track to become the longest-serving Senate caucus leader in history. Rick Scott chaired the National Republican Senatorial Committee during the 2022 cycle, which ended in disappointment after the party failed to gain the one seat it needed to capture control of the U.S. Senate. Before Wednesday's leadership vote, Senator Braun of Indiana said he would back Rick Scott because he believes it's time for a change. I'm going to vote for something that's going to change the current dynamic that we're in, he said. The option is represented by Rick Scott currently. Rick Scott's challenge rankled some in the Republican caucus who attributed the 2022 defeats to his handling of the National Republican Senatorial Committee. Rick Scott must really love to lose, griped a Senate GOP aide. Rick Scott and Mitch McConnell have long feuded over strategy and vision for the Republican caucus. McConnell has long been the subject of ire from former President Donald Trump, who has campaigned aggressively to oust him as the Republican leader in the Senate. Tensions ran high on Wednesday as numerous Republicans had no interest in getting in the middle of the clash. Among them was Tim Scott of South Carolina, who told reporters asking about the leadership contest, "No habla inglés." In a lengthy closed-door GOP meeting on Tuesday, Susan Collins of Maine questioned management of the National Republican Senatorial Committee's finances. Susan Collins said, "I raised some questions on the amount of money that had been raised and allocated in this cycle versus other cycles and just questioned the differences," she said.
علي حبه جنة وسيم النار والجنة وسي المصطفى حقا إمام الناس والجنة.
The Gate of Knowledge. Exegesis and interpretations of the supremely eloquent sermons, letters, and sayings of the Commander of the Faithful, Imam Ali ibn Abi Talib, peace be upon him.
You're listening to the program Gate of Knowledge on IRIB English Radio with Sheikh Mukhtar, a graduate of Islamic Seminary of Qom.
أعوذ بالله من الشيطان الرجيم بسم الله الرحمن الرحيم الحمد لله رب العالمين والصلاة والسلام على سيدنا محمد وعلى أهل بيته الطيبين الطاهرين Dear listeners to IRIB English Radio, Assalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh. I welcome you all to this episode of The Gate of Knowledge, where we are discussing about the topic of prophethood based on the teachings of Imam Ali alayhi salam in Nahjul Balagha. We are currently focusing on the second sermon, where Imam Ali alayhi salam, he explains about the circumstances in which the community of believers, he explains about the circumstances in which the community was in at the time when the prophets would come to those communities, the situation that they faced, and the grounds that were existing at that time that led to the coming of the messengers. He's explaining about that. He's opening up the different dimensions of that. And one of the important things that we saw is that at that time there was a problem that Imam Ali alayhi salam mentioned in Nahjul Balagha in this sermon, and that was the problem of misguidance and confusion. And this was something that needed urgent attention, because if humanity continued in this state of confusion, of course that follows with a lot of different problems and difficulties that the society can face. And therefore, of course, the prophets came to reignite the light of knowledge and the light of guidance in their hearts. And one of the things that we said is that the situation was that some people, just took the communities based on their own desires and whims, because the community at large did not have a general defined purpose for their living. And this was a very dangerous thing.
You're listening to the program Gate of Knowledge on IRIB English Radio, a program that presents a detailed commentary of Peak of Eloquence from the Master of the Faithful, Imam Ali, peace be upon him.
Now, coming back to our discussion, we saw that because of, the lack of guidance, or you can say lack of understanding the people had, and that state of confusion they had entered into, of course, they become a very easy prey for the devil. They became easy prey for people who are opportunistic, and people who already have some defined purpose in terms of their worldly life. And people who are confused become easy prey for such, because they can then, take the people in their own direction. They can then take the people in their direction. And this was something that was, rampant at that time. And of course, when you talk about this, it's not just, people who are rich that took the communities in a specific direction. Sometimes these rich people did not have power, or for example, they did not have the capacity to lead, and therefore those that had strength, and therefore those that had strength and power and authority, they, gathered the rich people, and they are the ones that, decided the fate of the lay people in that community. And this was something, of course, that led to a certain specific group of people to be the favored lot, while the rest of the people are kind of just, sheep, lost sheep that were just wandering and grazing around, not having proper guidance, and they could just be easily taken away by these wolves that were after the benefit of their own selves, and did not have any further aim and objective in life apart from just enjoyment of this temporary and temporal world. And therefore we see that people of this type, they started to, the upper class, they began to oppress people, misguide them, fool them, and force them to perform different types of actions that was probably not of their own liking, and and all that. Now, the question that comes that they're here is that what was the actual reason of all of this? The actual reason of all of these difficulties came not because of some sociological reasoning, some, for example, some kind of internal, you can say, sociological or political situation. No, there was something further than that. There was something to do with the way people were thinking, their thought processes and their understanding about the reality. Inshallah, which we shall discuss in the coming segment.
Stay tuned to the IRIB English Radio.
Now, when we talk about the community being divided into different, castes and different classes, it is mostly it's because of some kind of misguidance that entered these communities. When normally confusion is a very fertile grounds for complete misguidance to happen. So it starts with a confusion and then goes into a complete state of misguidance. When people get misguided, then what happens is that those power-hungry, corrupt individuals, they hold the reins. As I said in the Ibn Imam Ali alayhi salam in the previous segments, in the previous sessions of this program, we discussed that when these people became prey of confusion, when they became confused and slowly, didn't have that clear picture about their purpose and goal in life, then they become prey for these devils, for these power-hungry people, these proud and opportunistic people to take advantage of them and, take them towards the wrong aims and objectives. And that was what happened. Now, we can have some material, explanation to these issues, but we can have some material explanations to this, what the material explanations are is that what they say is that, the different class systems and the different political and economic situation of the people forced them, for example, to be in this state and there was no choice. And that you can say that social determinism that some of the, philosophers try to postulate. But all of those are, in my opinion, in the opinion of many scholars, of course, my opinion is the opinion of the scholars who have done the research in these areas. And of course, in terms of the teachings of Quran, these are not the result of just some social, political issues in the society. But it is a result of a problem in the way people were thinking, in the way people understood reality. And this was the actual malady that was causing all the other difficulties of the society. Inshallah, we shall discuss about this in the coming sessions. Wassalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh.
That was Sheikh Mukhtar, a graduate of Islamic Seminary of Rome, on the program Gate of Knowledge on IRIB English Radio.
مرشد هو آيات الله من ناداه أو لبه حين دعاه نال منه هو في الشدائد مجيد والفضل يمنى هو في المحاسن أحمد والوحي ربا.
If you're interested to know about history, culture, family, politics, religion, art, etc., you wouldn't want to miss the chance to tune into the IRIB English Radio. Please log on to our website, www.parstoday.com/en.
in the limelight.
Every day, a large number of Yemeni children die because of malnutrition caused by the war in Yemen, and also by the shortage of health and medical equipment in the country. The United Nations also announced in a report that hunger and lack of medical and health equipment are still the most important challenges that Yemeni children are facing. Mothers and newborn babies are the biggest victims of the Saudi-led war in Yemen. We have taken a look at some of the world media and press's coverage of this story. Please stay with us. The English website of Al Mayadeen Television Network has more for us. An official with Yemen's health ministry said more than 80 newborn babies lose their lives on a daily basis in Yemen because Yemen does not have the required medical equipment due to the Saudi-led war in the country. Najib al-Qubati, the Undersecretary of Yemen's Ministry of Public Health and Population, made the remark on Thursday, 17th of November, while addressing a local event. Al-Qubati said, some 39% of babies are prematurely born, which shows a significant increase compared to the period before the start of the war in Yemen. The official said the use of prohibited weapons was one of the reasons behind the growing trend in Yemen. He said several human rights organizations have already acknowledged and condemned Saudi Arabia's use of such weapons. He said Yemeni medical centers are in need of some 2,000 incubators, noting that 632 incubators have been provided so far. According to the Cluster Munitions Monitor, since launching the war with the support of Washington in March of 2015, the Saudi Arabia-led coalition has used internationally banned weapons, including American-made cluster bombs, to target residential areas in Yemen. Apart from the war, Saudi Arabia has imposed a blockade on Yemen, which, combined, have claimed the lives of hundreds of thousands of people. The military aggression has destroyed much of Yemen's infrastructure, including its healthcare sector. Recently, the Yemeni health ministry said mosquito-borne diseases such as malaria and dengue fever have been on the rise in the country. Speaking at a press conference in Hodeidah, Mohammed al-Mansour, the Undersecretary of Yemen's Ministry of Public Health and Population, said, war and blockade were two main reasons behind the increase in epidemics and diseases in the country. Mohammed al-Mansour said failure to implement malaria control program led to a rise in the cases of the disease from 513,000 in 2015 to 1,100,000 in 2019, noting the rate was higher in areas where citizens were displaced, such as in Hodeidah. He said malaria and dengue fever claimed the lives of more than 260,000 Yemenis between 2015 and 2019, naming the closure of ports, which has led to delays in the arrival of medical equipment and medicine, as one of the main reasons for the rise. In September, Yemen's Al Masira television network reported the Ministry of Public Health and Population had confirmed the Saudi-led blockade had raised acute malnutrition cases in Yemen to more than 632,000 among Yemeni children under the age of 5, and 1.5 million pregnant and lactating women. We have more on this from the website of UNICEF, unicef.org. More than one woman and six newborns die every 2 hours in Yemen from complications during pregnancy or childbirth. UNICEF Executive Director Henrietta Fore said, bringing life into the world in Yemen can all too often turn into a tragedy for entire families. She added, Decades of underdevelopment and years of intense fighting have left essential public services in Yemen, including crucial health care for mothers and babies, on the brink of total collapse. The maternal mortality rate has also risen sharply since the escalation of the conflict in Yemen, from 5 maternal deaths a day in 2013 to 14 maternal deaths a day in 2020. Access to quality anti- and postnatal health services is key to newborn and maternal survival. In the absence of adequate services, and because of lack of access and affordable transport costs, community healthcare workers are fast becoming providers of last resort for women and children, especially in remote, rural, and war-affected areas of Yemen. However, they too face challenges such as insecurity and a lack of supplies and transport. Half of all healthcare facilities in Yemen are not functional because of staff shortages, lack of medical supplies, inability to meet operational costs, or limited access. Those still running face severe shortages in medicine, medical equipment, and staff, putting lives at risk. Working with partners on the ground, UNICEF is supporting community-based service delivery and primary healthcare facilities with a focus on continuous care before and during the pregnancy, around the time of childbirth and afterbirth for both mother and baby. At the community level, UNICEF and partners are supporting community midwives and healthcare volunteers to provide case management of common childhood illnesses and home-based maternal and newborn care. UNICEF's Henrietta Fore said, "Antenatal care and skilled health attendants at delivery are essential to the survival of both mother and child." Adding, "We renew our call for all children in Yemen and elsewhere in the world to enjoy their full rights to health, education, protection, and peace." Russia Today has also covered the same story. Red Cross official Bashir Omar says the humanitarian situation in Yemen is one of an unimaginable horror, with two-thirds of the population deprived of basic health care, calling on the international community not to leave the Yemeni people alone facing their fate. With the armed conflict in Yemen now in its 8th year, the International Committee of the Red Cross released a report recently stating that around 66% of Yemen's 30.5 million population lack access to basic health care, and those in need of medical attention often risk death to visit the 51% of healthcare facilities still operating in the country. The crisis has been most acutely felt by Yemeni women and children. The report read less than 50% of births in Yemen are attended by healthcare professionals, and more than one mother and 6 newborn babies die every 2 hours in Yemen. Of the estimated 4.2 million people displaced in Yemen since the outbreak of the war in 2015, 73% are women and children. Red Cross official Bashir Omar said, "It's just unimaginable horror. We are doing our best to draw the attention of the international community to the plight of the Yemeni people. We're saying that the world should not turn a blind eye to what is happening in Yemen." Bashir Omar, who authored the International Committee of Red Cross's report, continued by saying, "The Yemeni people should not be left alone facing their fate." Meanwhile, Yemen's Ministry of Public Health and Population said the siege and intense bombardment with prohibited weapons cause a high rate of congenital abnormalities and miscarriages in Yemen, with an average of 350,000 miscarriages and 12,000 malformations. According to Yemen's health ministry, the Saudi-imposed blockade has led to an 8% increase in premature births compared to the situation before the war started in Yemen. The blockade has also increased the number of cancer patients by 50%. The figure showed 46,204 cases registered during 2021. Yemen's health ministry said The Saudi-led war had destroyed 162 health facilities in Yemen completely, and 375 were partially destroyed or were put out of work.
You have just listened to the Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran broadcasting. The Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran is broadcast daily from 1520 to 1620 UTC on the following frequencies. 31 meters, 9,650 kilohertz for the Indian subcontinent, and FM 91.5 MHz for Tehran. You can also listen to the Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran on Hotbird Eutelsat 3B and Iran Sat or Bat 5 and via the internet. Our internet address is parstoday.com/en. And now you can listen to IRIB English Radio via your mobile phone. Please refer to our website for the details. Please send your correspondence to the English program P.O. Box number 19395-6767, Tehran, Islamic Republic of Iran, or email us to englishradio@irib.ir. We would be very pleased to have your comments about audio quality and other means. Thank you.
Every night and every day, every night and every day, never forget to say, La ilaha illallah, never forget to say, La ilaha illallah.
IRIB English Radio, a heralder of unity and solidarity amongst Islamic denominations.
Oh Lord, here I am, pleading at your door. Send me your mercy, send me your peace, or I am lost for sure.
Hadith of the day.
Here I am, yearning for your cure. This humble servant will be diverted from you no more, no more, no more.
You're listening to the program Hadith of the Day with Dr. Shiraz Hussain Agha on IRIB English Radio.
Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim. Welcome to our program Hadith of the Day here at IRIB English Radio. Today on Hadith of the Day, we are going to be looking at a very beautiful and noble Hadith which has been transmitted and narrated from Imam Ali alayhi salam. This Hadith is about the causes for the stability of governments, the causes for the stability of states. Imam Ali has numerous Hadith regarding government and the reasons for the downfall of a government, its stability, its responsibilities, its rights, right? A lot of these are mentioned in the letter that the Imam alayhi salam wrote to his governor of Egypt, Malik al-Ashtar. In one hadith, Imam alludes to the stability of states and how a government can remain stable. The Imam said, "The greatest of rights that the glorified Allah has made obligatory on man is the right of the ruler over the ruled and the right of the ruled over the ruler. Meaning both of the two parties here have reciprocal rights, have a set of rights. Each of the parties have a set of rights. The ruled, meaning the populace, the masses which are ruled, and the governed, and the governors, the rulers, the government. In continuation, the Imam alludes to what will occur when both parties fulfill their rights. The Imam says, if the ruled fulfill the rights of the ruler, and the ruler fulfills their rights, then the truth attains the position of honor amongst them. Meaning if both parties fulfill their rights, right, then the truth, the position of honor, the truth attains the position of honor amongst them. The ways of religion become established, right? The marks of justice affirmed. The traditions and practices gets implemented correctly. Current times improve. The continuation of the state is desired. And this is the part of the hadith which alludes to the topic of our discussion. Meaning the reason, and one of the reasons for the stability of the state is the fulfillment of the rights of the ruler and the ruled by both parties. In continuation, the Imam says, and the ambitions of the enemies are thwarted. Right? This fulfillment of these rights also leads to the defense of the country, of the state, of the government, in the face of the attacks of external and internal enemies. In a very similar tradition, which is a little more concise, the Imam says, nothing fortifies states like justice. Justice here can be an allusion to the same thing that he mentioned, the fulfillment of those rights of the both parties. Because if they're not fulfilled, you know, this is an act of injustice by either or both parties. Thank you for joining us here on Hadith of the Day. We were looking at the reasons for the stability of governments in the words of Imam Ali alayhi salam. Until next time, assalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh.
That was Dr. Shiraz Hossein Agha for the program Hadith of the Day on RIB English Radio.
Allahumma salli ala Muhammadin wa ali Muhammad. Allahumma salli ala Muhammadin wa ali Muhammad. Allahumma salli ala Muhammadin wa ali Muhammad.
This is The Spotlight. The Spotlight takes an in-depth look at the headlines, featuring interviews with well-known guests from diverse backgrounds to get to the bottom of the story. You can listen to The Spotlight every day on IRIB English Radio.